Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Impact of influence. Influence.
Covering true crime throughout the Southeast.
Hello, friend. I am Matt Harris, Seton Tucker across from me, and Impact of Influence is on Facebook, part of the Evergreen Podcast Company. And we would hope that you would rate and subscribe and comment on the pod. And we also want you to check out the YouTube channel. Easiest way to find that is go to the Impact of Influence Facebook page and see. We're branching out with some cases now that Murdoch kind of comes and goes into our life. And this is one that's taking place in Lexington, South Carolina. And we will have old friend lawyer Lori Murray on with us in just a little bit to either set the record straight as she sees it from what's been in the media, and break down this story for us, because it's been a big deal in parts of South Carolina. The basics of it are, and she'll tell us, you know, how much of the media reports are true or prosecutors and what they say, but you've got these guys who run Lindler Farms in Lexington, a father and a son duo.
Which is just outside of Columbia, South Carolina, the state capital.
Very close. And they're in this legal saga. They're both charged with murder after fatally shooting a guy wielding a machete who had trespassed onto their property, on actually Junior's property. The shooting, though, was at the victim's residence rather than on the Lindler's land where the trespassing took place. And the victim was purportedly disarmed at the time shots were discharged. So this case is going to revolve around South Carolina's Stand Your Ground law, maybe Castle Doctrine statutes, and Lori will explain those. And it'll be a little weird because both of the people charged with murder have the exact same name except for the junior senior. Ryan Jordan Lindler Sr., Ryan Jordan Lindler Jr. So they do cattle rearing, hay harvesting, that sort of thing. This happened on December 6th when the junior was constructing a home on one of their parcels. He gets a security alert on his phone. This is the media reports. There's a guy with a machete there, the surveillance system shows. That is Kevin Newhouse, we know now, who lives nearby in Saluda Circle. The Lindlers, now take it from here. What do the Lindlers do next, according to the reports?
So the Lindlers drive separately to the Newhouse residence, and apparently they had the intention of confronting Newhouse. There was also some sort of relationship between Senior and Newhouse's father. Now, an altercation ensued, but the details are a little bit fuzzy. According to the prosecution, a witness observed Senior preventing Newhouse from entering his home. Now, the defense countered, they were claiming that Newhouse swung a machete, and this resulted in injuries to Senior's hand and Junior being bitten by a pit bull. Now, subsequently, Senior disarmed Newhouse, and Junior discharged multiple shots, as per the prosecution's account. Now, a witness purportedly overheard Senior instructing his son to shoot Newhouse, which led to his murder.
Yeah, that then led to the both being charged, because one shot the bullet, you know, shot the guy, and the other one, because he said, shoot him," allegedly, he was charged well. And the witness, one of the witnesses, there might be more. We'll find out from Lori if there's more, but Newhouse's mother had to see this whole thing. It happened in her yard because I believe Kevin lives there. She said she has profound anguish over her son's demise. Also said she has concerns for her safety should the Lindlers be granted bail, which we'll find out later they will, but they are supposed to stay away from her house. Newhouse, being at his residence, an under-perceived threat would have been in his legal rights to use the machete in self-defense. So even if he did swing the machete, if he did have the machete, he should be
you have the right to defend yourself on your property.
We're going to have to sort through all this, but despite the gravity of the charges, the defense staunchly maintained the innocence of the Lindlers, portraying them as law-abiding citizens who promptly contacted law enforcement, cooperated with authorities, and surrendered her weapons upon the police's arrival. And this comes kind of full circle to Murdoch because Eric Bland is involved.
Yes, Eric Bland and his partner, Ronnie Richter, are representing the father, Ryan Sr., and they are assisting in the defense of the son,
Junior.
Who is being represented by Gil Bell.
And there was a bond, Judge McLeod, December 15th. The courtroom was packed, they say.
But mainly for the Lindler family.
Yeah. And what was the surety bond? It was $150,000. Mm-hmm. They needed to be 10%, and then they were released from county jail. Now, the person who has it all figured out is our guest, Lori Murray, is also lawyer Lori, which is a hell of a hard time for me to say sometimes.
That's exactly why I did it.
I suspected that.
I was like, did you do this just to mess with all of us?
Yes, exactly right. Well,
hey, we're in speech therapy for our L's.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Well, great having you on. Thank you for spending some time with us. Do appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
December 6th, walk us through what happened on December 6th. You know, we've read the articles about the Lindler father's son being charged with murder of Kevin Newhouse, who you are working with his mother, I think, right?
I have met with his family. I'm missing his brother. I didn't get to meet with him, but I have met with his sister, his mom, and his niece, and his father.
Okay, so tell people what happened on December 6th.
Well, honestly, I think it depends on who you ask. Obviously, there's
good point.
There's the defendant side of the story, and then there's the eyewitness side of the story, which is unfortunate because his mother was actually present whenever he was shot, when Kevin was shot. So
heartbreaking for her. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It truly is. It really is, and it's, you know, it's been difficult for her ever since. She suffers from PTSD as a result, and you know, a lot of times PTSD is hidden underneath the surface of a person's personality, but I can feel this from her. This was extremely traumatic.
Of course, it had to be. And we gave a little synopsis of the story before you came on, Lori, but to give us a better idea of what might be different than what we're reading, let me go straight from the Post and Courier Caitlin Ashworth article, then you can straighten it out here. I'll read directly parts of this article. The father and son who run Lindler Farms in Lexington are facing murder charges for shooting a machete wielding man who trespassed into their property. The shooting was at the victim's home, not on the Lindler's property where he allegedly trespassed on. And the victim was disarmed when shots were fired, prosecutors said. Okay, so it goes on to say that Ryan Jordan Lindler Sr. and his son Ryan Jordan Lindler Jr., from now on we'll just go Sr. and Junior, Junior was building a home on one of their properties December 6th when he got an alert on his phone from a security system. It was a man holding a machete, security cameras revealed. It appeared to be Kevin Newhouse, a man who lived nearby in Saluda Circle. Further down in the article, the father and son drove separately to Newhouse's home, and apparently Ryan knew, I'm paraphrasing the article, Ryan knew Newhouse's father and was going to confront him. An altercation ensued, but what exactly happened is still unclear. A witness saw the senior, walk around the yard, preventing Newhouse from going inside his home. Newhouse swung the machete. Senior's hand was cut, and Junior was bit by a pit bull, is what the defense claimed. Senior took the machete, and Junior fired multiple shots. One witness heard Ryan tell his son to shoot. There, that is from the Post and Courier, and many other publications and news outlets had the basic same stories. I'm not picking on the Post and Courier, Lori. But what can you tell us about what I just read there, about that report? What is accurate? What is not accurate? What is misleading?
Let me pick it apart a little bit. You know, the facts that they've alleged is that they came to the house directly. That's not exactly true. Mr. Newhouse was on his property. There's no doubt that he was there. And I look forward to seeing the video from that, from the security cameras. but he was there. He did carry a machete. This is not exactly the safest of neighborhoods. He also enjoyed clearing brush in the back. He was not working at the time, so that was kind of one of the things he did to get out of the house, was just to go back in the backyard and clean some brush out at the woods there. So he always carried a machete. That's the thing. Everybody in that neighborhood knows and has seen him carrying that machete. He's never hurt anybody with it. He has never approached anybody with it, and there was never a threat of harm to anybody. So
that's pretty important, not to interrupt you, but that's pretty important, because if you only read the newspaper, it sounds like, if you don't know anything about the area, you don't know anything about this guy, you go like, why is this dude wandering around with a machete?
Yeah, you picture a horror movie. You picture a horror movie with a guy in a mask walking around with a machete.
It's super dangerous kind of thing. But so that sheds a lot of light on it. Okay. That makes sense now. Okay.
That's one. I would also encourage you to Google a machete, because in my head, a machete is a massively big knife. It's not that big. It has a horrible connotation to the word, but it is not as big as you might think. So might want to Google that. But anyway, back to that. He was down at the house. Mr. Lindler Sr. came to the house where he was, came to Junior's house that was building in progress. Mr. Senior, I imagine some kind of altercation took place on Junior's property, wherein Senior disarmed Mr. Newhouse. When Joni, who's Newhouse's mom, Kevin's mom, came up to the front door, because somebody rang a doorbell or knocked on the door, I'm not sure what happened, but when Joni came to the door, Kevin was standing there with Lindler Senior, and Kevin was not armed at that time. Lindler Sr. was carrying a stick. There is a picture of Lindler holding a stick. I think that Eric Bland described it as a half a broomstick. It's not a half a broomstick. It's bigger than that.
Wait, this is Lindler Sr., right? Holding the...
Yes, Lindler Sr., yes. And it's bigger than a half a broomstick, and it does appear to be metal. I think they were using it as kind of a cattle prod, maybe, just to help move cattle along. Okay. But he kind of walked Kevin down back to his house using that stick to guide him, like as if he was an animal. And once they got to Kevin's house, they did, I think, knock on the door. And that's when Kevin's mom came out. Kevin's mom addressed Lindler Sr., you know, asking what's going on. Lindler Sr. said he wanted to speak to Kevin's father, who had just left for work. And so he was not there. So Joni, Kevin's mom, talked to Lindler Sr. and said, he told her that Kevin was trespassing, and she said, well, you're trespassing now. You don't need to be here. Kevin then did try to come inside the house. Lindler Sr. would use that stick to prohibit him from free movement. So he stopped
going in his own house. Inside. Going in his own house?
Going into his own house, correct.
Well, and let me just set for the listeners that the age of Sr. was 52, and Kevin Newhouse was 26.
Okay, so
you just know, because when you say, I want to talk to your dad, you think of a...
True.
Like a teenager.
I think he was 36.
Oh, 36. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So how far is the walk? Or like, how far is the property difference, approximately? You don't have to drive it. You can walk it.
You can walk it. They're, you know, neighbors down the street.
Because early, you know, the one report that talks about them driving over to the house. So, okay. Let's talk about one of our sponsors. It is Factor. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh meal is never frozen and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, and they are ready in just 2 minutes.
Where did you have chili the other day?
Delicious.
And if you want gourmet meals, you can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, asparagus. So head to factormeals.com/impact50 and use code impact50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box.
That code's impact50 at factormeals.com/impact50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Impact 50 at factormeals.com/impact50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So the senior takes the machete or gets the machete from Newhouse.
Yes.
But then guides him back to Newhouse's house where his mom also lives.
Prodding him with a stick.
Prodding him with a stick, but won't let Newhouse mm-hmm. into the house.
Correct.
Okay, so
and
then...
When they say driving, just so you know, when they say driving, they did not live in that house. So they had to come from their homes to the property.
Okay,
so that's why they were driving. So, you know, the pictures that I have from the scene, because Joni took pictures after Kevin was killed. So the pictures that I have, there is one truck there in front of her house. That one truck, and that is Junior's truck.
Because it says they drove separately, but that may not be
true. Yes, they did drive separately.
They did.
Lindler Sr. drove to Lindler Jr.'s house. That's where he confronted Kevin. That's why his car's at Kevin's residence.
I gotcha. So the trucks were two different, like, you know, down the block or whatever it was.
Right. And I think that whenever I initially read the story, I thought, like you did, that, oh, they saw him on the camera, and then they went and knocked on his door to address him and talk to him about it.
Yes.
And that's not how it happened. Yeah, okay. There's not a gap in there. They were in constant contact. Lindler Sr. had him and walked him back from that property to his own home and refused to allow him to enter his own home.
Hmm.
Do we know why he's saying he would not allow him to go in the house?
I don't. You know, he kept talking about him trespassing and wanting to speak to his father. And at some point, Kevin started walking towards the back of the house when Sr. wouldn't let him go inside. So Kevin started walking towards the back of the house, and, you know, I don't know how long this conversation lasted. I don't think it was very long, but I know Mr. Lindler Sr. was talking about how he had known Kevin's father. Joni said that he made it sound like he knew them, but they did not know him. I think they bought pine straw from him one time, a very long time ago, but they weren't friends. They weren't even acquaintances. They just knew who they were, I think. So the incident occurred in the backyard after he walked around the side of the house.
The senior calling the son, or is the son coming because he sees it on the security camera? Son's,
I would imagine, and that's something that I'll have to come out and try, but I imagine that the security camera went to the son's phone. Son probably called dad and said, because he's closer.
Okay.
And dad, you know, came to the scene first. Junior then arrived on scene. Junior arrived on scene. I think they had done almost a complete circle around the house, and Junior arrived on scene, and Kevin started walking back again towards the backyard. And that's when the big confrontation happened.
So Newhouse must get the machete back, at least according to this, or no?
No.
Okay. So that is a little bit confusing in the way it's written. It sounds so whenever did he cut his hand with the machete, or is that not even true?
I think there is a little, it might be a little wound. So Mr. Lindler Sr. is wearing electrician's style gloves. So if there is a cut, you don't see it. I can tell you by looking at them after the murder, they did not require medical treatment. They did not seek medical treatment. There is no visible blood on them from any cut.
And by the time they get to Newhouse's home, he no longer has the machete.
Joni never saw the machete in his hand.
Okay.
And what is Joni doing during this whole confrontation? Is she still in the house or is she outside?
She came outside and kept trying to get Lindler Sr. to leave and telling him that he was trespassing. And she followed them to the backyard. And some kind of discussion was going on about him coming down to their house. And I think he had been on the property before. So, you know, Kevin may have trespassed. But I'm not sure the last time I've seen somebody get the death sentence for trespassing.
Right. And so there's this altercation. Junior shows up.
Junior shows up.
And Kevin are back. You know, they're arguing and whatever they're doing.
Kevin did not say a word, maybe one sentence when Joni first came to the door. But he did not say another word after that.
What's the pit bull have to do? Does that have to do with anything?
No. It has nothing to do with anything. After the murder, after they're standing out on the street waiting on the police to get there, they have a pit bull that is tied up in the front yard, and it was asleep, and Lindler Sr. started walking over and agitating the dog, and the dog came up and started yapping at him. I don't know that he ever bit him, but if he did, it was after the murder.
Okay, that's important because if you just kind of scan the articles, it sounds like this pit bull's around, like loose, and is part of the altercation, but that's not the case.
That's not the case.
Okay.
It was not part of the altercation at all. When they were standing in the backyard, Joni, Kevin, Lindner Jr. Arrived on scene, walked up behind Kevin, had him in a headlock. He must have had the gun in his hand the entire time, but he grabbed him in a chokehold and, you know, a headlock. And Lindler Sr. said, let him go. So he threw him on the ground. Okay. And Lindler Sr. said, shoot him. And he did.
While he was on the ground?
Yes.
Without a weapon?
Without a weapon. Not even one in reach.
How does that work legally? If someone tells you, like I tell Matt, hey, you know, shoot Dwayne, and you do it.
Yeah. Sorry, Dwayne.
Yeah. Like who are they? So
are they both equally culpable for the murder?
Yes, they are. Yes, that's a conspiracy to commit murder.
So the defense, I assume they're going to go with some sort of self-defense, or
they are going with self-defense, which is an interesting choice with an unarmed man, but they are going for self-defense. And not only that, they're going on self-defense on another's property. And this comes in under the stand your ground law. This is South Carolina codifying self-defense. The difference between self-defense and stand your ground is that for self-defense, you have a duty to retreat if possible. Stand your ground means that you do not have to retreat. You have to be in a place where you're lawfully allowed to be. You have to reasonably fear for your own safety of great bodily harm or death. And a reasonable person in the same situation would reasonably fear for their own safety or death. Now, you take the right, he had no right to be there because Joni had asked him to leave, told him he was trespassing. He did not leave. So he doesn't have a right to be there. And also, you have two grown men who are, one of them at least is armed. The other one has a stick in his hand, and you have an unarmed victim who is on the ground. So how can you reasonably feel for your safety when there are two people and you're armed and the person you are fearful of is on the ground with no weapon?
And so you mentioned there's some security cameras. Is it a security camera? Was there any security cameras in the new house?
Unfortunately not. Okay, no.
So it's just on the Lindler's property.
It's on the Lindler's property, yes.
So the witnesses to this are Kevin's mom and the senior and junior Lindlers.
Correct.
Who placed the 911 call?
I believe that Junior did, but I am not positive
after
about
the
that.
After the fact.
After the fact.
So there was no call made saying someone is trespassing on our property?
No. And there is, you can see the machete is in the back of the truck. So, you know, when they're waiting on police, I believe the machete is in the back of the truck. And, you know, if they were no longer fearful of their safety or if Kevin had it with him at the time, you know, why pick it up from a dead man?
Well, how does
Yeah, because they're going to say that he had it and he was swinging it or something.
Yeah.
They are trying to say that, yes, but he did not have it.
How do self-defense laws work on your own property versus someone else's property?
On your own property, you have a greater ability in the Castle Doctrine, but it's the codifying of the Castle Doctrine. There's a proximate cause issue too with self-defense. If they are on the other property for an illegal purpose, then you have to show that the illegal purpose was directly related to the offense itself. But you know, being on someone else's property is not much different. It's just that you have a lawful right to be there.
Do we know how many shots?
Four wounds, I can tell you that. And I don't think he missed any. There was one shot to the head, which was the first shot. So why continue to shoot it after that? But that was the first shot, two shots to the lungs and one shot to the back.
And so the police report shows him on the ground, like that'll be able to prove that he was on the ground.
I think when they got there, he was still on the ground. And I know that, you know, sadly, the family, the investigators in the sheriff's department of Lexington County did not provide them with any crime scene cleanup.
Oh, my goodness.
And mm-hmm. Okay, so I read in here, and maybe the mother is the witness because they mention, where did it say? It mentions a witness, but maybe it's the mother they're talking about because they say, One witness heard Ryan tell his son to shoot.
That would have been Joni. There wasn't another witness, I think, that
okay,
saw
so there's
a little
only,
bit of
we're
it.
Okay, so there's only this, those three.
Yeah. And Joni said, you know, that Senior looked at Junior and said, shoot him.
Because it's interesting because they, you know, in the articles, it keeps saying a witness saw Ryan rock around the yard. A witness said this, a witness, but that it's the mom.
You wouldn't want to identify a witness.
Okay. Okay.
And that's another thing that brings us to, you know, one of the things about the PTSD is, you know, fear for your own safety. But Joni is also dealing with fear for your own safety just because this murder occurred, but also because she is the only witness. And there are people riding up and down that street a lot. So there is camera footage. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of traffic on there. And unfortunately, the Lindlers come from a very known family in Lexington. The courthouse was packed for their bond hearing. Yeah. I mean, when I say packed, it was overflowing. So the new houses are very underrepresented in this. They don't have the power and the power behind their name that the Lindlers do. And when this bond hearing occurred, Joni had COVID and couldn't even go to the bond hearing. Ugh. But we have information that would lead me to think that it's possible that the Lindlers have been riding by their house. And I would like to see that investigated because that would be a direct violation of their bond. But I called the investigator on the case, left a message for him, called the solicitor on the case. He referred me to the investigator. Nobody's called me back.
Because they're supposed to stay 300 yards away, right?
There is no other reason. This is like a dead end street. So there's no other reason for them to be on that street.
Oh, it's a dead end. Okay, yeah, it's a Saluda Circle. Yeah, so I guess that
it blocks, says circle, but it's blocked off.
But I mean, you're not going anywhere. Through. Yeah,
you're not going. You're not going to do a circle.
Is there anything scheduled? What's the next step?
There is nothing scheduled. They'll have to schedule a hearing to have the Stand Your Ground. I assume that they filed the motion instead of just spouting it in the media, but. I'm not positive it's actually been filed, but either way, if it hasn't been filed, they'll have to file the motion, and then a hearing would be scheduled on the motion.
I just can't even imagine the mom witnessing all that.
It's horrible. She was 5 feet away.
Horrible.
But I want to be clear too, you know, because I talked about Eric Bland's representation because he kept saying that he represented both of them, and I don't know if that's a lack of understanding of criminal law, but it's really unethical to do that. You would have to have a very tight consent to represent the co-defendant and a conflict waiver in your file. But I did talk to his co-counsel, which is Gil Bell, and Gil Bell assured me that Eric does not represent both clients. Even if he talks about assisting in the representation, he does not represent Junior. They have a joint defense agreement, which allows them to work together on certain things, but Eric Bland is not taking care of Junior. That is solely the responsibility of Gil Bell. When he talked about representing both on court TV and in both of his press releases, that is false.
Gil Bell is of the Moore, Bradley, and Myers law firm.
Correct.
He's a defense attorney.
Because there's obviously a conflict with these, you know, it's going to, I'm thinking, going to be debated about exactly what the father told the son.
I don't know that they disagree with that. I think the only issue is going to be whether or not Kevin was armed at the time and whether they disarmed him right then. But even if you did disarm him, if you've taken that machete away, then you've taken the threat away.
Well, also, I would ask this, and I don't know, would this come up? They've got a gun. He's got a machete. Even if he's swinging it around, right, they have the ability to get in their truck and leave.
But again, this is what Stand Your Ground does. It takes away the duty to retreat.
Gotcha. Okay, right. Cool. Excellent. Right. You broke it down for us.
But you do have to be in a place where you're lawfully allowed to be. And once Joni Newhouse said, you are not supposed to be here, you're trespassing, they should have left the property at that point. And again, this is, you know, once they have disarmed, and I believe that they even have admitted that they disarmed him. So once you've disarmed him, there's literally no threat. There is no threat at that point. And we believe that it occurred much sooner than when they said, like I said, Joni will tell you that she had never saw Kevin holding a machete when they got back to her house.
So it's possible that he took the machete when he was at the house that they're building, and then walked him back with a stick, and then things happened from there.
And I fully believe that Mr. Lindler was probably armed at that time. I don't know how he would have disarmed Kevin in a hand-to-hand combat situation, because again, Kevin was 36 years old, but I mean, anything's possible. He certainly didn't show a gun whenever he got back down to the house, but either way, maybe Kevin just threw the machete down. I don't know.
I mean, it's possible that the guy says, "Hey, give me that machete." And he's like, "Oh, okay." You don't know. I mean, we don't know, right?
And Kevin was not a violent person. But either way, I know he was not violent that day. I know he was unarmed that day. I know that Joni asked Mr. Lindler Sr. to leave. I know that Ryan came up behind him and grabbed him in a headlock. I know that Lindler Sr. said, "Let him go." And Ryan threw him to the ground, and Lindler Sr. said, "Shoot him." And he did 4 times.
And
that's murder.
The Lindlers will be on home detention with a GPS ankle monitor. And they're supposed to be 300 yards away from the victim's home. So, Lori, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks again, Lori.
Okay. Bye. You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Bye. There she goes. We will keep following up with that as things break. Interesting story. Comments, questions, impact of influence on Facebook. And please rate and share and comment on the episode. We'll talk soon, friend.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule, history so interesting, it's criminal.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.